What made you want to go the path of, you know, starting your own business as opposed to, you know, finding a great job?
You know, it's a great question. I think that there's a lot of parts to that. I think the first is that I do kind of come from a family of entrepreneurs. My dad runs his own business. My dad actually had a beverages startup back in the 1970s. So basically, I've kind of grown up with a little bit of a business mindset. I do think that in general, a lot of, you can work salaried roles and have a very comfortable living. But really, you know, a lot of, as far as, you know, if you want to be, how do I say this? If you want to be really ambitious, and if you really, really want to take a big swing, you need to be an owner and you need to create something of your own very often.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests on Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. On today's episode, we are going to dive into the frozen foods world. And we're actually going to talk to the guy who made my lunch today. I don't know if it was directly or not, but I went to Sprouts and I got my lunch from Bauza. So, Alex, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Seth. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Looking forward to hearing more about your story and just really how your company has been built. And I think that our listeners will be able to learn a lot from your journey as well. But first off, help our audience understand where's your company at right now and what are you guys selling?
Sure. So to give you an idea, Bauza is a new product. It is a combination of pizza, which we all know, with a steamed bao bun, which is commonly found in China and other parts of Asia. So it's steamed, it's not baked. And it's filled. The combination of the two is kind of savory with sort of soft and fluffy dough. We founded the company about 5 years ago in China. My partner and I were longtime expats and students over in China. And we'd been friends for many years. We were both former investment bankers and consultants and entrepreneurs. And we came together in 2016 to launch this product originally for the Chinese market. We were originally purposed as a retail concept, meaning like almost like fast food or more like street food. You know, typically bao buns are a ubiquitous kind of morning street food consumed, you know, all over China and all over Asia. And we wanted to bring pizza to that format. And so really in the early days of Bauza, we operated little joints, delivery joints. We had a 24 seat, really cool little sit down place in Beijing for a while. We had a flagship kiosk in a really busy shopping mall in Shanghai. And it was only really in the last couple of years that we positioned, it was always part of the plan, but then we really started to position into frozen. And so we launched our CPG line a couple of years ago. It's doing really well in China. And we determined that we would ultimately bring it back to the United States. Obviously, it's a very familiar kind of taste. It's pizza inside of a bun. Clearly, there's a huge history of that type of product here in the U.S., huge degree of familiarity, even if it's not with bao buns per se. But we always knew we wanted to bring it back to the U.S. And it was last year that we started taking our initial steps toward that. I made the move back to California, where I'm from, L.A., at the end of last year. And throughout 2021, we've been getting stood up. We got our launch actually very recently at Sprouts, where we're carried nationwide.
That's awesome. And yeah, I mean, it's a unique thing. Like, I had him for the first time today, and I mean, tasted awesome. You know, pizza flavor, had a pepperoni one and a cheesy spinach one. I would have been excited for the margarita pizza one, but that one was all sold out. Which is a good thing. But it was interesting because it, like, the dough, I mean, it's just different than, it's a different dough than you usually have here in the States. It had like an interesting sweetness to it that was really good. And I mean, until I met you, I had never even heard of bao. So has it been interesting bringing kind of a new, I don't know if it's a new category, but very much like a new product of a new type of bun, and educating people on what in the world it is? Has that been an interesting journey, bringing that education to America?
Definitely. If you look at our history in China versus where we currently are with the U.S. consumer, they're very different value propositions. You know, obviously, bao is super ubiquitous, so everybody knows bao. You know, the Chinese are going to probably see us as bao, right? The Americans maybe don't know about bao, but they might be more inclined to see us as pizza. So it, you know, as far as the U.S. goes, it's still kind of early days, and we're learning more and more about our consumer and the market in general every day. So far, we think that the reception's actually been quite good. It's actually been surprisingly good. We had no idea really what to expect and how much we would need to educate people. But kind of in the back of our heads, we have a belief that's essentially, you know, never bet against pizza, at least here in the U.S. If there's a pizza in a bun, pizza in a this or a that, or in some way, some sort of new form factor, or new shape, or new style, we always think that Americans are going to be super curious. You know, I would be, right? So
yeah.
So that part, I think, has helped us quite a bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's been so many times where I've tried just a variety of odd forms of pizza. And I'm not the only one who does that. You mentioned that you had a background in investment banking. So did that kind of spark your mind for thinking maybe it'd be fun to run my own company one day? Because I have a good friend of mine who, he was in investment banking before he started his business. And I mean, one, it built his network really well because he got to know all of these business owners coming in, but also he got to see pretty well, you know, what makes a company investable, what doesn't, you know, who's coming in that shouldn't be coming in, and who's coming in that, like, they're the golden ticket winners and they're going to get all the loans. So how did that background of investment banking kind of prime you to be wanting to launch your own company one day?
Well, big time. You know, the cool thing about that space is that you get to see a lot of different types of businesses across a lot of different types of industries. That was probably the thing that I most liked about it. So my firm was engaged in everything from, you know, auto parts to pharmaceuticals to natural resources to actually, you know, food and beverage. You know, one of my assignments was actually in the Chinese food retail landscape, with regard to master franchising and area rights for foreign F&B operators. And so that's actually kind of what got me thinking at the very early outset when I created the idea for Baozi, or when I came up with the idea for Baozi, thinking, well, shoot, there's a business model to this. If we could, you know, build stores and build a real concept that could be franchisable. So yeah, that was super helpful. And then of course, you know, high pace of work, you know, the opportunity to really get deep into analytics, research. I think a lot of those things have been helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I can only imagine that like seeing all of those things would be extremely helpful because a lot of business owners, they just start and then they, you know, just you learn those things, but you kind of just learn them through your own experience as opposed to really getting to see them beforehand. What made you want to go the path of, you know, starting your own business as opposed to, you know, finding a great job with another company or staying in investment banking? It's a big jump to start your own business. And I've noticed every business owner seems to have different motivations for why they want to do it.
You know, it's a great question. I think that there's a lot of parts to that. I think the first is that I do kind of come from a family of entrepreneurs. My dad runs his own business. My dad actually had a beverages startup back in the 1970s. And so basically I've kind of grown up with a little bit of a business mindset. I do think that in general, a lot of, you know, you can work salaried roles and have a very comfortable living. But really, you know, a lot of, as far as, you know, if you want to be, how do I say this? If you want to be really ambitious, and if you really, really want to take a big swing, you need to be an owner and you need to create something of your own very often or work for, you know, equity. And so I'd seen the power of that when, you know, I was with my prior firm. My old firm was really a, you know, we were investment banking boutique. We were not a big firm by any stretch. So mm-hmm. we were able to do a lot of nuanced and kind of nimble engagements in different things. We had been playing in startups. We would raise money for startups. We would assist US companies into the Chinese market. So I got to be around a lot of entrepreneurial ventures. And I think I learned enough at least to be interested and also to see the fruits of various labors actually work. And so I think that's part of what sort of guided me in that direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you fast forward, you know, the company's launched and doing fairly well in China and then bringing it to America. And you mentioned that, you know, your launch in America is nationwide across Sprouts, which we've talked to other companies where, you know, it's the farmer's market and then, you know, a couple small local grocery stores, and then maybe you get a test of, you know, five local Kroger's or something like that. What made you, I guess, want to go that route of like a nationwide launch? And also like, how did that happen? I guess is the big question, because that's it's a different route than kind of a traditional CPG.
Well, that's an interesting question. So, you know, we talk about kind of the farmer's market phase, right? What maybe needs to be said is that we had our farmer's market phase. You know, at the very beginning, it just happened to be in Beijing.
Yeah, I guess that was in China.
Yeah. And so,
that's a good point.
I'd say one of the really cool things in our story is, you know, we were able to really shake out a lot of the mistakes in the early years in a much tougher market. But also a much more forgiving market as far as costs. So we were able to make a lot of mistakes that would probably have put a lot of businesses out of business here in the US, mm-hmm. much cheaper in China and be able to survive. And so, you know, our early days were really about going to the streets. We did in our first 2-3 years, we probably did like 100 events, everything from catering to, you know, a birthday party to, you know, the Beijing Pizza Fest where we have 2-hour lines, right, to this and that. Right. And the other thing too, is that we got first involved in co-packing in China. So from literally zero, it was me, it was my partner, Lauren, in these Chinese factories that were, you know, willing to put up with us and help us and guide us. And we learned a lot from them. But we were able to really get much more familiar with the operational and kind of the industry side of this industry in China. So by the time we came into the US, a lot of it was actually quite familiar, getting into a co-packing relationship, building our supply chain, working through packing, even regulatory stuff, which is obviously very different here, but has similarities. and we were comfortable enough with our formulations and our product that we could step on it a bit faster than some other brands.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I mean, I'm sure that it helped to have all of that data and all that experience when you're coming into the States. What would you say are the most stark differences between business in China and business in America? Because you've kind of built both. Initially starting over here, yes, you're an established brand and you have that history, but to me, to all the other Americans, that like you're a new brand. So what are some of the most stark differences?
Well, that's a big question. There are books and books and books that cover that topic. It's a real, I would say nobody out there really has all the answers, terms of really being able to decode and translate those two markets and business environments. I would say in our case, there's been a number of things, but, I would say the biggest, how do I put this? I would say some of the biggest things are, kind of the way that the industries are structured. In the Chinese retailer landscape, the retailer is a little bit more of a bully. They're more like the landlord. They have very, very high slotting fees. And they make money churning brands. A lot of brands in China are really one and done. So, a CPG brand with like a 3-year life is considered, you're supposed to have pretty much made it and exited like very quickly. So you see a lot of brands in the Chinese market. I would say the Chinese market really rewards you for going big, raising an absolute mountain of capital and spraying it around pretty liberally. You're competing also, it's hyper competitive. So everybody talks about the Chinese market with, 1.4 billion consumers. Well, you've also got like, maybe a billion entrepreneurs too, or hundreds of millions of entrepreneurs that are out to compete with you. So you're competing in a highly, complex and competitive environment. And therefore you face, a lot of pressure on pricing. Pricing power is not nearly as high. You face a lot of pressure to continually release new products. You have then a lot of pressure to buy your way into distribution and buy your way into even eyeballs. So the US market is a little more normal. It's a little more, I wouldn't say relaxed, but it feels more normal. Influencers in China, for instance, it's like 100% paid gig, and they are not necessarily, some of them are entertaining, definitely. But a lot of influencers will just sit there and peddle the cheapest deal that they can peddle. And that's how they accumulate followers. So it's really, really transactional. Whereas influencers in the US are actually influencing. They're actually presenting a lifestyle, presenting content that's rich and engaging that their consumers want to follow. So when they make a pitch, for instance, to, if it's a product or anything that they discover, their followers are consuming it because their influencer consumes it, not because their influencer offers a 70% discount on it. So things like that, I would say honestly, China's maybe a little more hardball than the US.
Do you think that, because is your business partner American as well?
Yeah, he's from Kentucky.
Okay, so do you think that made it more challenging? For the two of you being two Americans initially launching a startup in China, I mean, I'm sure the statistics are low for success in the startup space in your own country, much less in a totally new country.
You know, it's interesting. My partner and I, we both speak Mandarin pretty fluently. I've been living in China for about 8 years. Lauren's been there for about 14, 15 years and studied Mandarin even before I did. So his Mandarin's exceptionally good, among the best of any foreigner that lives in China. Linguistically, there's some challenges. I wouldn't honestly, I don't know that there's been huge degrees of discrimination or anything like that. I feel like China is quite open. So anybody can make it. It's just you know, do you have what it takes to compete? And so if you apply kind of a Western mindset to that market, you might not be like an overnight success.
Right.
I think it is very difficult for people that apply a lot of the same tools and tactics in China that they would be used to here. But it doesn't, you know, you can do quite a lot in China. Again, the overhead costs are quite inexpensive. And I don't feel like there's really been a point where just because we're American, we've been shut out of anything. I think some people might look at us and think that we're not serious. But actually a lot of people look at us and kind of be like, wow, this brand is authentic. This is real pizza. These guys are Westerners or Americans. They know pizza. They know what they're doing. So, I don't think it's really been too much of a hindrance, you know, relative to anybody else in the market there.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear. Do you have different flavors in China?
Yes. And we do a little more food service business in China as well. Most of the flavors are actually the same. So margarita, pepperoni, barbecue chicken, and cheesy spinach, those four flavors are the same actually in both places. They actually taste quite similar as well. And the Italian sausage is unique to the US, whereas in China we do a roast duck. That one's very good. And then we also do, for a while we were doing a breakfast baozi in food service, which we might actually, you know, think about here in the US.
Yeah, I feel like something like that could do really well, but I love breakfast food. So, you know, along this journey, I feel like your story is so unique. What are some of the things that really stick out that you've learned as you've been building these businesses?
You know, I think it all comes back to, you know, the value of team and team building and managing people, both within your organization and outside. I think at the very beginning, we were a little bit stretched. We had a couple people helping us, kind of summer interns, you know, people that Lauren had worked with and whatnot. But when it came time for us to build an organization, you know, we were in a difficult position. We hadn't really raised much money. We were a tiny little company. A lot of young Chinese, for instance, would prefer to work for a larger company with more safety and security, right? And maybe a more of a name brand to build their resume, for instance. So recruiting was a little bit difficult, and we were trying to do a lot by ourselves. And that's when it became exceptionally clear that we need to build a team, and we need to put good people in a place where they can be successful to help build the organization. And that notion was reinforced when we started making some really good hires, and we got some great people in the door. Those people were just so fundamental to everything that we were doing. And then same thing on, you know, outside the organization, you know, our suppliers, our vendors, you know, our customers, being able to manage different types of people. You know, in a business like this, you're engaging in a lot of different practices. You have technical stuff, you have marketing and messaging and PR stuff, for instance. You've got, business and financial stuff, right? So you have a lot of people involved in building something like this from a lot of different worlds and a lot of different backgrounds and mindsets. So you have to be able to communicate with all of them and gel with all of them. So that's been, I think, the biggest learning experience is, you know, trying to get better and better at that. And really, really understanding that that kind of team aspect and people aspect is really critical.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I always like to ask that question on the show, and it so often is around the aspect of team and people, which, I mean, for me as a fellow entrepreneur as well, just realizing it is hard. It's hard to give things up. It's hard to let go. It's hard to trust that somebody else can do it as good as you can. However, it really does seem like the businesses that are making it, you know, there's been that release. There's been that realization of, hey, we can't do this on our own. Did you run into some challenges with that? Like, was it hard at first for you and your partner to start, once you really started to add some key players that were maybe taking some of the responsibilities off your plate? Did you find yourself having a hard time letting go of some of those, or did that come pretty natural for you?
It came natural by necessity. There's no other option. You know what I mean? At the early stage, we're trying to grind and we're trying to survive and trying to build. And at the same time, trying to keep an eye on the future and seeing the big picture. So there was just so much going on that we absolutely embrace, the ability of people to take on more. I would say, part of the thing, it gets harder as you go along. Cause now, Bowser's just had its 5th year anniversary. So a lot of the story, a lot of the brand, a lot of the knowledge of the product is stuff that we've just built and built internally. So we understand it so well. Now, when new people come in, it takes a longer window for them to really truly understand and onboard with us, right? And so that actually, the more knowledge bank that you build, the more difficult it is to maybe transfer out or transfer down. So it just takes patience, and that's just sort of how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, as you look more to the future, like, what is success, not for Bowser, but what does success look like for Alex? Like, when you, is there a point, a specific point that you're working towards, or some dreams that you're working towards? What does success look like for you?
You know, it's a great question. First of all, I mean, this brand is something I did create by myself. I came up with the name. I did a lot of the early product work myself. I was making bows in my kitchen. I was making bows for my friends. I was making bows at parties. So I do have a lot personally, a lot of personal love and investment into kind of what we're doing. So it is meaningful. And crazily enough, I mean, Bowser has been like one of the biggest parts of my life in the last 5 years. But that said, I mean, really for me, success is, I've taken this on as a mission to do something really, really hard. I've always felt like, I think where I was, maybe less fulfilled in some of the other work I was doing was that ultimately things were not my decision. Things were not, responsibilities were not 100% on me. I didn't have 100% ownership or even any ownership or control, right? And so the opportunity to build something and see it through to its success, I saw as one big thing. I wanted a real big challenge in my life in general. And so so it's more than just business. It's a good opportunity to prove that you are onto something and prove that you can navigate and build. So it's maybe a little bit bigger than just Bowser, but I think I've partly found some of that success. Whether or not Bowser becomes a massive thing or not, I found a lot of that success already in being able to trust myself a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to recognize that the importance of the journey. How, as entrepreneurs, often, yes, there are some milestones we're working towards or some numbers we're working towards. But I've known a lot of people that they've hit those numbers and then they've realized like it's anticlimactic because they were so focused on that as opposed to realizing, it's about the journey. It's about what you learn along the way. And it's about, are you becoming a better person and treating people well along the way? And so I love that perspective of, knowing the value of doing something really challenging. So I think that's a healthy perspective to own. And this has been valuable just diving into your story. And again, I love how unique it is just because we don't often hear businesses coming from China over to here. We hear a lot of Americans talking about how cool it would be to break into the huge Chinese market one day. So I think that it's going to be fun to see how you grow. What's next? What are the next 6 to 12 months look like for Bowser?
Well, we're continuing to grow our business in China. We're taking on more and more retailers. We're now starting to move into the convenience store channel, which will be very, very, very interesting and very transformative, we hope, for that business. As far as the U.S. goes, we plan on hitting a lot more freezer aisles in the fourth quarter of this year and into all of next year, including natural grocers and even some, hopefully, club and also mainline grocers. So that's really awesome. Been our focus, and it's all about growth at this stage and commitment, absolute commitment throughout all of that to making the best product we can make, keeping quality as solid as we can keep it, and trying to make customers happy on both sides.
Yeah, it really it is a quality product. It feels different. It tastes different. You can understand the ingredients on the back of the box, which is always good. And so I encourage all of our listeners, head to a Sprouts if there's one near you, and go and get some Bowza, because it's pretty wonderful. So, Alex, thank you so much for joining us on the Small Business Storytellers. We really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Seth. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.